Whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Brought to you by Rock Antenna, Germany's number one rock radio station.
Hey, Thomas.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Oh, good morning to you, wherever you are.
Good afternoon to me.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
You look very much in shape for some more Pete concerts.
I'm ready, brother.
Now, take us back when this whole idea started. I don't know how we have to imagine that. Did you get a call from Adrian or Tony Gerselick? You want to play some Crimson? Or how did this all start?
Well, that's exactly how it happened. As a matter of fact, I had received notice that Adrian Belew was trying to reach me. I didn't know why. I thought maybe he wanted to do something.
Yeah.
And I knew his playing. I knew what Adrian was doing. And immediately I thought, I'll take that call because, boy, oh, boy, Steve Vai, Adrian Belew, we might come up with some, we'll get ourselves into real trouble, So Adrian got on the phone and he explained that he was putting a band together. Originally, he wanted to get the original King Crimson together with the whole original band and celebrate those 80s records because they were like 40 years old. And Robert couldn't do it. And Bill was busy.
Mm-hmm.
And when he told me, when he asked me, he said, would you like to play Robert's parts and do this thing with us? I mean, immediately in the back of my mind was a big yes.
Okay.
Because I just knew I loved that music. I knew it would be the kind of challenge that I love to engage in. And I also felt I could do it.
Yeah.
So you need those three things, And, but I had some questions, The first question was, well, how does Robert feel about it? Because I didn't want to get into anything, I didn't know what was going on. But he said, no, Robert was very behind it. He gave me the blessing and he also suggested the name, Beat. So that was reassuring. And then I had to make sure I could play the stuff. So I listened to it. And I felt, I can get this. And then I approved the gig. And then I got the songbook because Trey Gunn had and a group of people had made this forensic music transcription book for every single note on those three records. So that was a godsend for me,
Yeah.
But once I started putting my fingers to the actual parts, I realized that they're booby trapped, they're Robert Fripp parts. And, because he has a unique technique that he developed his entire life through vision and discipline. And I have a totally different technique, But I just felt that probably about 80% of the stuff was easily under my fingers the way he did it.
Yeah.
And then probably 15%. I got the same notes, but I changed the way he did it because our techniques were too alien to each other. But there was a small percentage of stuff that was just ruthless and just so out of my ballpark at my age,
Oh, well.
And that was frame by frame, There's that one riff. It just goes, it's breakneck speed. It's impossible to pick, and it goes on forever. I couldn't do that consistently every night, so I changed it around a bit, but that's the only one.
Now, with Beat, we have four of the best musicians in the world together. Mm-hmm. And they play music. But how much do you guys still have to practice in order to get that right, to get the chemistry right? Did you have to practice at all?
Oh, are you kidding? I practiced for a year. I think for Tony and Adrian, it was much easier because they knew the stuff. They played, they invented the stuff.
Yeah.
And Bill's parts were, they're challenging for any drummer, but Danny was a big fan. And Danny has a wide breadth of technical depth. I mean, yeah. he's a beast, you know. So he had to practice the stuff, but got it. And me, when it came time to learning Robert's parts, it was a whole practicing menagerie, because it was a restructuring of a style.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of notes, and they all need to be memorized, and they all need to be played perfectly. So did I practice? Brother, yes. And a lot. I mean, I was on tour with Satriani for months, and you'd walk past my dressing room every night for 2 hours. And you hear me working on this beat music, and you go past Joe's dressing room and you hear him working on the Sammy stuff, you know? So we were kind of like, you know, burning the candle. But then there was a period of time where I was home for about 4 months before beat kicked in. And I really, you know, hunkered down there. It was fun. You know, it's always been the main attraction to me to imagine something on the guitar that I can't play, knowing that if I work on it, I can do it, and then working on it, and then being able to play it. This is the big payoff, and it's never changed. So even at 65, you know, I love just sitting and working on that stuff until it's blazing, you know? So it's nice. It's appropriate for me.
It's amazing. I mean, when you look at the video footage that's been on there and social media and whatever, although you play such complex music, you guys seem to enjoy it so very much. You can see each other. Everybody's smiling. You know, everybody's just happy to do that. It's just amazing. I mean, you guys must have fun every night.
Well, we do. And I think a part of that is Adrian. When he performs, it's very joyful, you know, when you watch him.
Yeah.
He's very up. He's very positive. He's very joyful. And that's very contagious. You know, I'm kind of more traditionally, I'm intense, you know. I'm not as joyful. I mean, you have to define it for yourself, but I like to float. You know, when I'm performing, I like the feeling of floating. And that's a different, there's a lot of joy in it, but it's a quiet joy. But it's still very intense. But the beat stuff is great because these guys, they're all completely consummate professionals. They've had histories of decades and decades of touring and playing so many gigs. I mean, Tony Levin is like, I think he's 78, you know?
I think he turns 80 by the time you guys get over here. It's probably 79 or something.
Yeah, and he's one of the spryest of us all. And I mean, I could go on talking about Tony forever. I mean, that guy, he's so great. He's so fun. He's such a gentleman. He's so considerate, but he's tough. And he's just got energy, and he just delivers. It's just remarkable.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, how does Tony keep in shape? You know, the way he's on stage, it's just insane.
Most cigars.
The happy cigars or the regular cigars?
No, regular cigar. But yeah, I don't know. You know, so the band is experienced. So when you get experienced guys that have been through decades of working with other people and working with people at times who are difficult, and then you start to know what you want and you know what you don't want. You know what tours you want to do. You know what people you want to work with. And you get to a point where you just turn down anything that stinks like shit, you know, that's gonna have bad actors in it. Because one of the things you discover from touring for 50 years is, if you're out there on the road, it's like a piece of your life. And you want to have a good time. You don't want to look back at that piece of your life and have a bad taste in your mouth about it. And I've been in so many situations where it doesn't matter if you're playing arenas or stadiums or clubs. The quality of the people that you're touring with create the quality of experience. And I've learned that the number one prerequisite for anybody that I hire for my band or that I tour with, it's not necessarily their musicianship, although that's very important. It's are they comfortable in their own skin? You know, are these people happy people? You know, having a meltdown now and then is okay, but when you tour with a curmudgeon, it ruins a whole tour. You know, you could be making a lot of money and playing to a lot of people, and you'll look back at that particular period of your life and feel sick.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't do that anymore. And Beat is like the polar opposite of that. These guys they feel the way I do. You know, they're just not going to get involved in those kinds of challenges, musical challenges, yeah. And everybody's just very comfortable in their skin. They're very secure. They're very independent. They know their parts. They know the music. They know what they are comfortable doing. And they're nice people.
Yeah. You know, we're talking about different stages of your life, but I got to ask you this. Was playing with Zappa more challenging, or is playing Pink Crimson material more challenging for you?
Well, Zappa was more challenging, much more, because...
Okay.
But back then, you know, at that age, 20, 21, 22,
yeah.
I had those kinds of chops. And because Frank would write music on a piano, you know, he might write impossible melodies that do not belong on the guitar. So yeah, I have to figure out all these pickled ways of playing them. Whereas Robert Fripp...
Yeah.
His parts fall beautifully on the guitar. I mean, there's like, you know, they belong, but they're just very difficult to navigate. So they both have different challenges. With Frank, like I say, I was younger and I had a lot more time to practice that stuff. And, you know, with Beat, I'm much older. I still have to practice, you know. But they're different types of challenges, you know.
Yeah.
Being with Zappa, I was young, so there was other things that were challenging. Like, you know, you got to learn when to sleep, when to eat, you know, when to go to the bathroom, you know. Touring is a different life, you know. And it took me a decade to learn how to walk, but now I love it. I've been loving touring for quite some time.
You know, you guys play, you focus on the three records that, you know, the other two guys were on back then in the 80s from Kim Crimson. But after playing so many shows, have you ever considered add some other like 70 Crimson stuff?
Shut your mouth. I got my hands full. Yeah, no, of course we do. It's a heavy lift to learn a King Crimson song for any of us. It's not the kind of band where we would say, hey, you want to do Frame by Frame tonight? You know, it doesn't work like that. You got to get one set down, you know, bulletproof.
Yeah.
And do the tour with it. And then, but we have been talking about changing and adding some songs and changing some things around because we've been doing it for a while now.
Yeah, yeah. Once you've done this tour here, it seems like you're still involved in so many projects. You do stuff with Joe Satriani again, in such a way thing. It feels like there is an end to this project Beat.
Well, I wouldn't use a hard ending as a description. Okay. But for the most part, in my mind, I've been touring for a long time. Just recently, I kicked off my solo tour in May of 22. And I really haven't been off tour since, and I'm going to be out until Christmas of 26. And this is because it was a perfect storm. You know, I had a solo record. I had to do my tour. It was like 19 months. And then I went right into G3 and then right into Joe Satriani, Steve Vai, and then right into Beat, and then right into Satch Vai, and then back into Beat, and then back into Satch Vai, and then back into Beat, Satch Vai. I've been doing this pretty much nonstop. So it's my perspective that come this Christmas, my plan or my feeling was with Beat, I'm happy to play any place in the world that will have us at least once.
Yeah.
And after that, I'll feel like I've completed my my job. And with Satch Vi, this was something I think that we've waited a long time to do. And it's something we wanted to do once, probably.
Okay.
You know, because, you know, Joe is very creative and he has a solo career. And I similarly, and Adrian similarly, you know, everybody has many different things going on. But I was touring on my own as a solo artist for probably the last 30 years or so. So these gigs with Joe and with Beat have been wonderful little respites and really nice opportunities to play hooky, you know, skip school, you know, or just like do something different. But there's always, whenever I do that, and I've done it many times with David Lee Roth and Whitesnake and other situations, there comes a point where there's a pull to just get back to being the master and commander of my own ship. You know, in my solo work, I live in a bubble. I'm by myself, and I do everything. I write the music, I engineer it, I record it, I produce it, I mix it. I make every decision on all levels, business, everything. Mm. And I'm used to it, and I enjoy that, and I've set my career up like that. I don't know why. It's just the way, it's my way. I work with a lot of great musicians, and as a result, I get my music, and my goal is to create a catalog of music that's relatively undiluted. But there's always those fun opportunities to go and do things like Beat and Satch Vi. But I think at the end of this, I'll be going off grid for a little while.
All right. All right. But is there anything on your bucket list that you haven't done yet, haven't achieved yet, haven't, you know, have missed out on? Which I couldn't imagine, but still.
Well, my bucket list is an endless wishing well. It's a bottomless wishing well. So yeah, there's things that I partially completed. Before I kicked into Beat, I was working and all this other stuff. I have a solo acoustic vocal record on the shelf that I need to complete. I have a video, the last video from Inviolate that I need to edit and get out. I recorded about 3.5 hours of symphonic music with three weeks with the Metropole Orchestra in Holland, and 2 weeks with the Tampa Day Philharmonic. That was at the beginning of the tour.
Yeah.
And that's all sitting on the shelf waiting for me to dive into. None of this stuff that I have planned for myself is very commercial or anything like that. But, you know, you get ideas and they don't leave you alone.
As far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, King Crimson right now is yet again in existence. And I think, as you know, there's something going on. I don't know if Robert did something, or I thought that Tony is like a part of it again as well. So that confused me a little. I'm like, how can he be in, you know, in everything?
I think, like you, I heard that when we were on tour.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, of course, because Robert, he's relentless, and why wouldn't he want to do more unless he, you know, decided to pack it in? So it wasn't a surprise. And when he said Tony was doing it, I thought, great, that's good for Tony and it's good for the band, you know.
Okay.
But I was a little skeptical, you know, of course, like everybody. So, you know, I went to Tony and I said, hey, I heard. And he goes, it's not true. It's true that he was doing it.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but now things could change. I don't know. But I can't answer your question because I know as much as you. I haven't kept up on it, but it would be great. I hope it does.
You guys, you know, celebrate music that is 40 years old, and you're celebrating music from an old band. How much young people do you see in the audience?
Well, here's the funny thing about that music. It may be old music, but it may have come out a while ago, but it's not old.
Yeah.
It's unidentifiable music.
Yeah.
If you listen to those three King Crimson records, you will never be able to, you could say, well, it's kind of rockish. Well, it's very prog-ish. Well, it's kind of like, it's accessible. It's kind of pop, you know, it's got a little bit, but there is nothing like it. And it doesn't sound old.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm playing this music, it sounds as relevant as it ever did. It's not like if I was to do a David Lee Roth reunion, that would be old music.
That's true.
And it would sound old. It would be great, but it would sound like another generation. That King Crimson music is truly timeless.
Yeah.
You know, so it sounds as fresh every night when we play it. And the audiences, I didn't know what to expect. And when the managers of this were kind of putting it together, or what happens is you try to figure out what kind of venues you're going to play, how many people are going to come, so you know at least how to book it. So their only real barometer for that is, well, how many people will Adrian pull? How many people will Tony pull, Danny and Steve? Well, maybe we could play these places because of those musicians.
Okay.
But what I discovered when I hit the stage and I got out there, the music was the boss. Mm-hmm. That the fans of this band are intensely supportive and precious about this music. I noticed that they were the ones that were reacting to the music, not necessarily the players. Of course, the players, you know, hey, well, there's Tony, there's Steve, whatever. My God, there's Danny, you know. But it was the music that pulled the people. And what I know, I mean, sure, maybe there's some Vi fans, maybe there's, you know, some Tool fans. No, it was King Crimson fans. So they were mostly, you know, an older group that comes to the shows. I do see all age groups and a lot of women. In my career, my music, for the first few decades, there was no women in the audience, very few. You know,
well, it changed with David Lee Roth, didn't it?
Well, that was then. I'm talking Steve Vai. It was musicians, guitar players, just waiting for me to make a mistake, you know. And they got plenty of them. But then later on, the female audience sort of came to my music because it's melodic music. It's not just guitar proto techniques. So with King Crimson music, it was, I might assume in the early days, it was mostly male.
Yeah.
You know, but not as much as like a Steve Vai show in the early days. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty even thing when I look out to the audience, because people bring their spouses and their children. Usually with a band like this, it's the young people that are there are usually brought there by their parents.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, there are absolutely teenagers, but the majority is the older folks.
Mm-hmm. That's it. No more further questions, Your Honor.
All righty then.
I'll be happy to see you here in, I think in June or July. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But
looking really forward to being there.
That's going to be cool. I hope it's not going to be too hot in this tent. But here in Munich, where are you going to play?
I have no choice. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Whole lot of talk. The interviews that rock. Subscribe to our channel for more rocking podcasts.